Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello and welcome to Monday's edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, brought to you by Ginger Pickle and Manscaped. My name is Andy Warren and it's just me and Stuart Watson today. Just the two of us on a Monday to talk about Town's victory over Burton, look ahead to Accrington and look at the broader picture in League One. Full disclosure, we tried something a second ago. It didn't work. I started recording the pod before Stu was here, hoping that he'd come and join in. And both of us were absolutely shambolic at it. So this is attempt number two at the pod, Stu. And hopefully it's better than the previous one.
Yeah, sorry, mate. That caught me out a little bit, joining the party late. I thought you was messing me about. I didn't bring good energy. I will do better.
It wasn't a great party, to be fair. So it was a one man party. Not the best parties, are they? One man parties. But let's crack on.
You know that song Just the Two of Us? Do you remember Will Smith did a cover of that?
No,
that was on Big Willie Style. His original album, yeah, Just the Two of Us. For some reason it's a song about becoming a dad for the first time. I don't know why that song's resonated with me and stuck with me. I think it's just like an album track, but just thought I'd say that. I said it.
Unaware. I linked that song. There was a TV advert with it in with some crabs, I think. And that's all I've got on that.
Just the Two of Us had a line in it where Will Smith is talking about how he needs to keep up with modern technology for his children. And he talks about CD-ROMs. So that probably dates it a little bit for you.
Yeah, if there's one thing that Will Smith never got his head around, it was using Encarta. When Wikipedia was on a disc. Those were the days, hey? But these are the days for Ipswich Town. let's get on with some football, Stu. It's hard not to feel good about Town on this Monday morning. 3 wins in a row, four goals again at home, which has become a bit of a theme, particularly against the teams down the bottom end of the league. And the beginnings of something, hopefully, which took another step forward at the weekend.
Yeah, it's easy to sort of say, well, can't really read too much into this one. Lower league, lower level fodder that was beaten. We haven't learned anything new. Wait till the bigger games are ahead. I think it's more than that. This wasn't Forest Green Rovers, bottom of the table. I agree. I don't think we gleaned a great deal of information from the Forest Green game. This one, I think we did. A couple of the minor sticks that we've been beating Ipswich Town with this season has been conceding some poor goals and switching off at times and not dealing particularly with sort of long balls to the far post. Dug in deep and got a really good clean sheet, so answered that question in this game. And not being clinical or ruthless enough when on top, not killing teams off in their purple patches in games. Did that in an 11-minute spell just before half-time in this one. So answered a couple of little nagging doubts when we were sort of picking the bones out of the shortage of wins around the time of that Bristol Rovers game. Those were a couple of the themes that we discussed, and I think they answered a couple of those questions at the weekend.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this game, to be honest. I think I don't think anybody really is naive enough to expect League One teams to come to Ipswich and not expect them to offer something. And so I think at times earlier in the season, we might have looked at the first 20 minutes and thought, oh, is this something we need to pull to pieces? No, like teams are going to threaten Ipswich. And it's about how they stand up to it, which they did really well. I think we saw all sides of Town at the weekend. And yes, this isn't a game at Bolton, it's not the game at Barnsley or the game at Derby, but it is a game against a team who, while having their limitations, are on an upward, real upward journey. Good, solid team who have made some big strides of their own. So can't take too much away from Town after this one. I enjoyed an awful lot of what I saw, and a lot of what I liked boiled down to partnerships, Stu, about partnerships. And that's what gives me the confidence going forward that maybe this version of Ipswich Town, the January model, has maybe taken a step forward in the last couple of weeks, those growing partnerships in certain areas of the pitch.
Yeah, again, rewind to that sort of soul-searching podcast where we were probably thoroughly miserable after the Bristol Rovers game and, oh, this is going to be Ipswich, history's going to repeat, and why is it unravelling again? I've mentioned a couple of the things that we talked about. Another thing was rotation and not having a settled side and not having a best 11. Well, since then, I think we are starting to see some chemistry grow. I think we're starting to see, game by game, the January signings find their feet. You're right, it's relationships and partnerships across the pitch. Burgess and Wolfenden, since Burgess has come back into the team, that looks like the best balanced centre-half partnership. Clark and Burns was the big takeaway relationship from this game, wasn't it? Those two sort of linking up down the right. In the early games between those two, there were times where Clark would play a forward pass and Burns perhaps wasn't on the same wavelength and the ball would go out of touch. And they're just starting to pick up now and get a bit of a bond going. Clark playing those forward passes and Burns being alert to them and running onto them, which got Ipswich's right side going, which is something that we've been discussing for a little while as well. So that was one of the major takeaways from this game.
Yeah, those first two goals were that right side kind of flowing at as good as we've seen it, weren't they? Clark moves differently to Danasian. Obviously, got a lot of respect for what Janoi's done for Ipswich over the last 18 months, particularly. But I think we always knew that Clark was a slightly different dimension, really, for Town. And those long legs striding forward at pace, you could see Burton backing off him. He fainted to shoot for the first one, which is another threat that he brings. And that's just going to hopefully open things up for Wes a little bit. And he first one with the aid of a flick off a Burton heel, but he's picked out two really nice balls as well, isn't it? Which is another piece of the puzzle that's needed there. So, there are other partnerships I'd like to chat about in a minute, but that one does feel really important, that right side, because the balance is what we need to see from Town, isn't it?
Yeah. Clark, as you say, is different to Janoi. He's more dynamic. He's more powerful. He'll drive with the ball at his feet. And I think it's just Burns slightly adapting to that different style of fullback behind him. First signs that they're really starting to be on the same wavelength there. It's only right and fair that we sit here and really talk up Wes Burns' performance, because, again, in recent weeks, without overplaying it, I think when we did the boot room video, it felt like it was becoming almost too much of a thing. The more we talked about it, the more it seemed to be overplayed. I've seen some Twitter comments saying that Wes Burns has been crucified in recent weeks. I've not seen anything that's taken it to that level. He got clapped off in the last game. I think it's just been people very softly, gently saying he's not quite been the same player as old, and yeah, and just maybe not quite got the same spark against him, and Caden Jackson's just putting a bit of heat on him. It was never more than that. That was all the discussion was around Wes Burns, but he looked like he had his mojo back on Saturday.
Yeah, I would say a lot of the reason for that discussion is on Caden Jackson's shoulders. If Caden hadn't performed so well in those Burnley games in particular, I don't think it really would have been a conversation particularly, because it's not there wouldn't have been a viable alternative. But the way Caden had been playing, that there was, which meant a bit of a spotlight on that. But the thing I liked about Burns at the weekend is that he was looking forward and playing forward. Like I think Clark helps that. I think Clark gives him a bit of a push forward as well, because you could see, I think it was the second of the goals that they combined for. That pass was a proper leading pass that needed was to really turn the burners on to get it, ended up in the front row of the north stand, managing to dig the cross out, which to do that at that pace, but also kind of pick out Broadhead perfectly, takes some doing, really. They've definitely come on, those two, and it shouldn't be underestimated, I guess, how long it takes to get that going. I think we saw it so naturally with Janoi and Wes Burns because they'd played together at Fleetwood previously, and we didn't see the early bedding in stages. It takes time, doesn't it? These partnerships, they can't just happen overnight.
No, some players sort of click instantly. That just seem to be, you get it from time to time. Two players just seem to dovetail quite nicely, and others have to work at it a little bit. And I think it's taken a few games for them to get to that level. But yeah, that was a big takeaway from this game, was that right side getting going again, for sure.
Mm. One that has kind of clicked quite quickly is Morsi and Luongo, isn't it, in the middle there. They look a really natural pairing for me. Similar in ways, different attributes in others. And they look like a really good pair. That could be such a straight. If they can keep Luongo fit and playing, that could be massive for Town, I think, in that area of the team. Do you think?
Yeah, I think if the right side was probably my third biggest takeaway from this game, I'd say the second, vying for first, would be the performance of Massimo Luongo. Again, the caveat here, as we've just had with caveats around Wes Burns, there's a major caveat that this is not a knock on Cameron Humphreys at all. That young man has done remarkably well, played a lot more games than he or any of us anticipated, and he's not let the team down. But Massimo Luongo helped take them to another level, I thought, in midfield at the weekend. I think it enables Sam Morsi to not be, I was going to use the word babysitting there, which is probably a bit strong for Cameron Humphreys, but just being that senior head alongside a teenager coming into the game, and them just kind of looking out for each other a little bit, and maybe having to think about his partner's game as much as his own game. Massimo Luongo is a player that's played a lot of championship football, that was a star player in a Sheffield Wednesday side that did very well in the second half of last season in this league. And he looked at it, didn't he? For someone who hasn't played a great deal of football over the last year or so, that was a very impressive performance. And as you say, the two of them worked quite nicely together.
Yeah, you need that in the centre of midfield. I like the strength, I like the drive, I like the positivity. He plays forwards. He's creative as well when he wants to be. Thinks, makes good decisions. So yeah, keep him fit. Manage him, of course, from this point on. Humphreys will play games, undoubtedly. But you've given us you've teased some third favourite things and second favourite thing. I need to know your favourite. Mm-hmm. What's your favourite thing?
I'll move on to that in a minute. Just on Luongo, I think the thing I like about him the most is his game intelligence. He's someone that can clearly reads the game. He seems to know where the ball's going to fall. And McKenna talked about it in a couple of the cameos, that he comes on and he seems to get up to speed with the game quite quickly. I think he's one of these people that can solve the puzzle quite quickly. And Ipswich are facing different puzzles week in, week out. There was a big one at the weekend with the way Burton were playing, with the way they went man to man, with the way they were going long. And Luongo is one of those players that can work that out and start to find the solutions on the pitch. Most notably was his ball over the top when Ipswich took one of those quick free kicks in their own half. And ordinarily, you'd never see them just stick a long ball over the top. But Luongo played the ball over the top, which led to the Ladapo goal for 3-0. That was then a sort of a loose defensive header that Chaplin jumped on and set up Freddie for that third goal. So, yeah, he looks like a bit of a problem solver. And also, probably his upgrade on Humphreys is he's got a bit more of the physicality as well, a bit more of the tenacity as well to deal with that side of things, which helps when Morsi's had to kind of play within himself from a physical point of view because of the booking situation. Mm.
That third goal you spoke about there, I don't think I'm overplaying this, but I think the reason they played that long ball is because the left back Hamer was just coming back from being booked. So the reason they played that is kind of like a rugby up and under. that was who ultimately, I think, headed it into the path of Chaplin. He wasn't back in position, having been booked to give away that free kick. So that's the intelligence you're speaking of there, like seeing that. That isn't ordinarily an Ipswich ball, you're right. But scenario.
Yeah, and when we talked about Ipswich maybe becoming a bit predictable and people working them out, it's because they were trying to do the same patterns of play to score. A lot of the Ipswich goals come, and again, we saw it at the weekend, down the flanks, cutbacks, someone scoring from around the penalty spot. And that is their super strength, and that will continue to be their super strength. But I think in the last few weeks, I've definitely seen them mix it up a little bit more and react to in-game situations. I thought it was notable on Saturday. I'm not saying they've suddenly become a lot more direct, but I just think they've mixed it up a little bit more. There was during that first 20 minutes, Walton suddenly realised, actually, instead of trying to play through this man-to-man high press, he just started clipping a few little balls onto the halfway line. That was one of the goals came from a ball. Yeah, I mentioned the Luongo, didn't I? Walton started just to bypass the defence and play some different balls into different areas of the pitch, and just keeps the opposition guessing a little bit, I think.
Yeah, there was a couple to Ladapo, wasn't there, who came deep onto halfway to take one. Another one into Morsi that were good there from Walton. Commentary, what's number one then? You've teased number three, number two. They're two great things, but...
It's the clean sheet. It's the clean sheet as a whole, and the way Ipswich, not just in those first 20 minutes that were really awkward and a sticky opening 20 minutes, but the second half as well. There was a period where Burton seemed to have corner after corner. They didn't change their approach at all. Long throws. And Ipswich dealt with it pretty comfortably, actually. They headed the ball away. They looked like they were really up for that clean sheet as much as winning the game. McKenna said they'd spent all week looking at Burton, knowing what was going to come, knowing that it was going to be a repeat of the game at the Pirelli last August, where, my word, Ipswich had to dig deep for a 1-0 win that day. They just look really fired up as a unit to keep another clean sheet. I think the penny has dropped with them that actually they back themselves to score goals on any given day. I don't think that we've ever questioned that as an issue. Yes, there's been times where they haven't been clinical enough, but on those days where goals 2, 3 and 4 don't flow, make sure you keep it tight at the back. Stop conceding some of these sort of avoidable goals. And I think they've gone right back to basics from that Bristol Rover game onwards, and just doing the basics of just being brave, getting blocks in. Burgess made a brilliant sliding tackle in his own box on the cover. Wolfenden, Clark, both made some brave headers in the box. Walton looked back to being, yes, he didn't make loads of saves, but he looked back to being really confident in sort of plucking aerial balls out of the sky and things like that. So, as a unit, the way they kept that clean sheet, that wasn't an easy clean sheet at all. So that was the thing that most impressed me from this game.
It's kind of almost the opposite of... I remember one of like Paul Lambert's teams just could not score goals. The defence was good, but they just an inability to score meant that they would concede. They'd put pressure on themselves and concede silly goals, lose tight games 1-0. And that's almost flipped around now, that you back them to score at all times. And if you can just have that steel at the back, this is why I feel confident about Ipswich in playoff scenarios. I know we're hopefully still talking about an automatic push, and we'll get onto that in a bit, but the fact that they've got this ability to not lose games, and can dig in and not concede, that's why I feel very, very confident about them in a playoff scenario. And even that extends, actually, to these big games that are on the horizon. I think it's why go to Bolton, go to Barnsley, go to Derby. And there's not... Yes, they haven't beaten many of these teams, but they haven't lost to many of them as well. And I think things have progressed to a point where I'm feeling quite confident about what's in front of Ipswich. And actually now looking at whether teams are going to slip up enough to allow them to get there. But I came away feeling really, really happy with what I'd seen from this Ipswich team. They carried on playing in the second half as well. It didn't quite hit the heights of that big spell in the first. But it just didn't fade away to nothing, they did keep playing, and that's that pleased me as well. A little bit of a ruthlessness, and thankfully goal number four did arrive just to mark that as well.
You never get a second half that lives up to the first in those scenarios when a team has a 3+ goal margin at half time. How many times have we seen a big scoreline at half time and the Ipswich timeline is full of free the Ipswich nine, and it could happen today? And invariably it doesn't, because it's human nature. There's no jeopardy in the game anymore. Managers can start taking people off. Minds start to go to games ahead, especially with a Tuesday night game coming up. It was job done. But that's why I think that the clean sheet was really good, because Burton, you know, didn't give up on this game either. They didn't just sort of, they didn't feel like they were marking time till they could get back on the coach and get home. They that was a really useful, almost training session in the second half for Ipswich, almost, you know, a real sort of proper set piece training session that hopefully that they can kind of call upon that as a bit of muscle memory in games where there's a bit of a bombardment on their box at some stage, and they can go back to that period in the Burton game and think, yeah, we can deal with this.
Should we talk about Connor Chaplin a little bit, who another brace for him, is sixth brace of the season, 19 goals in all competitions. He's really important to this team, isn't he? Not trying to understate that or play that down a little bit. He's as you mentioned earlier, the key way of scoring goals is to pull the ball back for somebody like him to put it in the net. And he's really important. I really enjoy watching him. He was at the heart of everything at the weekend, I thought. Perhaps creating more than he has done previously as well.
Yeah, before you even go into what he adds on the pitch, he's clearly someone that's bought into everything that this club is about, running towards adversity, Suffolk life, the community side of things, community trust, all of that. He's a trustee with them, the foundation. And it shows on the pitch. He's so busy. He's another one that I'd put in the clever bracket. Knows, you know, he just has a way of finding space, whether it's in the box or outside of the box. And his finishing is just superb, isn't it? You just fancy him. As soon as you fancy him, no matter where he is in the box, he finds space. Whether it's one touch, two touch, he'll find the corners of the net. And so many of his goals have been that. You know, that was a trademark goal, certainly the first one, wasn't it?
Interesting. I really like seeing him be able to kind of take a touch, spin, and then still have that. That's the bit that I'd struggle with, like the orientation of being able to sort of take that touch, spin a little bit. And he didn't even hit it hard into the final corner. That's placement. That's just knowing where you are, knowing where the defenders are, knowing where the goalkeeper is and where the far corner is as well, and marrying it all up. Clearly he's going to reach 20 goals for the season, all competitions. I'd like him to do that in the league. I think that'd be brilliant if he could do 20 league goals as well. And but the League One golden boot isn't out of the question for him from this point. And if Ipswich are going to be on the run that they need to be on to seriously be in the automatic chase come the Exeter and Fleetwood games at the end of April and then May, he could well fire himself to a League One golden boot, couldn't he? I don't think that's out of the question at all.
It's not impossible, is it? He's on 19 goals all comps, 16 in the league, which puts him 2 behind Johnson Clark Harris of Peterborough. He's level with David McGoldrick at Derby. Why not? If Ipswich are going to go on the run that we hope they do, the goals will hopefully continue to flow, and I'm sure Connor will be amongst them. 6 braces in there, which is quite something, isn't it? The hat-trick still eludes him. His reward for scoring that second was to immediately get taken off afterwards. Understandable with the game coming up on Tuesday and then Bolton on the horizon as well. But I'm sure a little bit of him is disappointed that he's not had many opportunities to go and grab that match ball. He tends to come off quite quickly after getting a second.
Yeah, I asked him about that on Saturday, and he gave the correct answer, which is that's one to ask the manager, but I'm not bothered unless as long as the team wins. I think he's come off in pretty much all of those games when on a hat trick, apart from Accrington. I think I look back because he came on at Accrington and scored twice. So I think that might be the only time that he's remained remained on the pitch on a hat trick. But one will come. One will come eventually. And when it does, I think he'll deserve it. And I'll tell you what as well. You've written something that's gone on our websites this morning about his goals, where they've come from. I bet he knows every single one of those stats you've put in that piece. He loves his numbers. He knows his numbers. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's done in the past. I bet you anything, you haven't taught him anything new in there about... You taught me a lot about where they've come from, what foot they've come from, and headers and things like that. But he'll know. He loves that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I won't read them all out now on here. Go and have a look at that if you're into that sort of thing. There's a breakdown of where they've come: first half, second half, left foot, right foot, inside the box, outside the box, etc., etc. But yeah, Connor Chaplin, I would go as far as saying a rare breed in someone that is a professional footballer, getting quite deep into his career, that has still retained this sort of boyish love of the game. And that's not true of all footballers. Some of them, I think, just naturally over the course of time, it becomes more of a job than a passion. There are times that we can relate to that. I'm sure there are times that anybody who works in an industry that is also their love will feel that it just takes a little bit of the shine off of it. But Connor Chaplin has retained all of that. He absolutely loves football. He's someone that could sit and talk to you about football, I think, at all levels of the game for hours and hours. I think the same is true of the manager, to be fair, in Kieran McKenna. So I'm sure those two have some long old conversations about football. But yeah, he's got his sights on more, has Connor Chaplin, hasn't he?
He certainly has. I'm sure he's clearly going to get past 20. Go and get that golden boot, Connor. That would be brilliant. And if he does, that can only mean good things for Town. Have you got any more Burton thoughts here? You've given us 1, 2, and 3. Was there a 4 and a 5 on the things that you liked?
I don't know about an official ranking. I think while we're talking about goal scorers, we shouldn't sleep on Freddie Ladapo here, who has had... I think he's done remarkably well to get to the place that he has in this season. He's got, I think he's on 14. What's he on now? 14 all competitions, 12 in the league. That is a pretty good tally for someone that didn't particularly hit the ground running. It took him half a season to really get up to speed. Someone who's not really found, he's not had a run of starts at any stage. For him to get onto to those numbers is really important. And you talk about relationships. The way he's kind of facilitating the wide men and the two number 10s in behind him shouldn't be underestimated. Yes, he got his goal at the weekend, took it very well on the run. But his all-round play, I thought, was so good. He backs into people. He's strong. His link-up play was good. He ran in behind. I think the arrival of George Hurst has just given him another little extra spring in his step. So I think we've got, I think Freddie Ladapo's found a new level to his form in recent weeks. Mention to him.
On the subject of Freddie Ladapo, both of these incidents involved him. I assume, Stu, you've seen the two refereeing incidents involving Freddie Ladapo back again, have you, from the weekend? The offside, that the phantom offside, and and in the first half, where I think it was Jasper Moon came across to try and tackle him and fell to the floor and ended up having a free kick against Freddie. You're looking at me like you haven't seen them back.
No, I have. I have seen them back. Yeah, the second one, the offside one, there might have been an argument of a sort of slightly earlier phase of play or something like that. I'm not sure. I didn't slow it down and study it. But the first one was absolute nonsense, wasn't it? Really good spin from Freddie just over the halfway line, and Jasper Moon's is in all sorts of trouble, isn't he? And goes down very, very softly because he knew he was in trouble, and the referee gave the free kick. And that was actually a moment. I thought that was quite a big moment in the first half that just livened up the crowd a little bit. It added a bit of injustice into the air. It was the first time Ipswich had got a bit of joy going forwards. And if I had to pinpoint a moment where that first half started to turn a little bit, that was one. But yeah, that ref was quite whistle and card happy, wasn't he, in the first half?
Well, yeah, I didn't think he was very good at all, but you've just said he actually sparked the win. So all things considered,
There was another moment where Broadhead in his own half turned someone and won a foul, and that was a booking as well. And just a few little moments where Ipswich, once they started to win those little 50-50s, Burton were so locked on man-to-man, when they started to win more of those fouls, when they started to get that, it just felt like that game was, McKenna's right, that could easily have gone another way. I think if one of those moments for Burton had gone in, that could have been a frustrating old afternoon, because Burton suddenly have something to defend and Ipswich have a bit of frustration creeps into the air, and who knows how that afternoon would have panned out. But we both felt, you kept turning to me and saying, not sure about Moon at the back. He was looking a bit wobbly, and they had that defensively. You just felt that Ipswich, there was spaces to exploit, and if they got the first, it would go the other way. And thankfully, we got that scenario, didn't we?
Yeah, excellent job done. And all that means that Town still stay 5 points back from Plymouth, stretch the gap on some of the teams below. But before we get into the next game, which is Accrington tomorrow night, I think it's probably worth just having a look at what lies ahead this week in League One, because there's the nuts and bolts of Town's side of the Accrington game to discuss. But the picture's bigger than that. Five back from Plymouth, going into a really big week in that battle. If we're pinpointing that battle as Town v Plymouth for second place, which it could well be, Town have Accrington at home and go to Bolton. But in those two games, Plymouth host Derby and go to Barnsley. That's a big week of League One football, isn't it? We're going to know come 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. The picture could look very, 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 very different in all ways, really.
It could, yeah. I think we agreed that Sheffield Wednesday are too far away. Yes. They're 8 points clear with a game extra to come. That requires them to drop points in four, probably five of their last 14 games. This is a team that's won 10 of their last 11, so that's not going to happen. So I think we can say Sheffield Wednesday are gone
I
now.
I think so.
There are obviously others in the chasing pack, along with Ipswich. Bolton, Barnsley have got games in hand to come. But if we just focus on Ipswich catching Plymouth, you're right, this next week looks huge. Because if you look a little bit further beyond, Plymouth's running looks pretty kind on paper. If I skip back to the end of the season, Plymouth have got Shrewsbury away, Cambridge at home, Bristol Rovers at home, Burton at home, and then Port Vale away. Those are all games that you'd be fancying Plymouth in. So if the tide is going to turn, you'd hope that it needs really to sort of, I think that gap needs to be eaten into sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it goes beyond that run that you've just said there. I think they only have, after these games, they play Derby and Barnsley, as we just said. They play one team in the top half, Shrewsbury. That's it. Mm. Five of the bottom six still to play in what would then be a 10-game sprint for home.
Yeah, but they do have the distraction of a Wembley Cup final against Bolton, and we've got to hope that it is a bit of a distraction for them. Everything that goes with a day out at Wembley and trying to get some silverware, both for Bolton and Plymouth, that will be on their minds. That's the same weekend that Ipswich go to Derby, so that could be an interesting weekend. Plymouth have lost some players to injury. Cooper, the goalkeeper, obviously chief among them. So yeah, there's still got to be hope that 5 points, that 5 points can be overturned.
Mm. Everything's built on their incredible home record as well, isn't it? 15, I think it's 15 wins in 17 at home or something like that in the league, which is outrageous. Some wobbles on the road. Obviously, Derby at home, Barnsley away for them in this little run. You never know, but. Town's job is their own, isn't it? They can't do anything about Plymouth from this point. They've played those games. They've taken 1 point from six available against Plymouth. Now it's down to Town, and Bolton is kind of rearing its head over the hill. But before that, we've always said that these four games against the sides at the lower end of the table had to come away with 12 points from them. They've got nine now. They need to win by three in this game and I take £34 million away from Mark Heath, and he may well never be heard from again. If that's the case, so he'll stay on his... I think he's in Dorset at the moment, and if they score three against Accrington tonight, he might do well to stay there and avoid me. But
get a fake passport and go on a run.
And a little moustache and a hat, and he'll be off. But they've done three quarters of the initial job here to get to these big games. They've just got to finish it now, haven't they, with 12 points from 12, and then crack on with the next phase of the season.
They have, and there is just this slight ingrained fear in me that Tuesday night, you've got to get that job done first, because there's just, it's human nature that everybody's eyes start to turn to Bolton away on Saturday, and the nature of the win on Saturday, 4-0, looks more comfortable than it was. And everyone turns up on Tuesday night thinking, yeah, right, this is routine. And I can't imagine Portman Road is going to be at its rocking best on Tuesday night. We're due for a bit of a cold snap. I think people will turn up and just be expecting it. And that's going to put a little bit of pressure on the game. Accrington, I don't think, are as good as Burton from what I've seen. But conversely, they're probably not going to come at the game with the same sort of intent as Burton and leave the same gaps at the back. I think they're in a proper relegation dogfight where they're just going to come and try and grind something out. That will be their approach. That will John Coleman will just get them set up to be really organised. It's going to potentially be another one of those deep block nights. And I don't think anyone can rest on their laurels. I don't think Kieran McKenna and the players will allow their minds to slip beyond that. It's becoming a bit of a running joke, this kind of take it as a game as it comes, not looking at the table. We can only concentrate on ourselves. Kieran McKenna's last press conference leading up to the Burton game finished with him saying, having trotted out all of those cliches, sorry for the boring answers, lads, but that's where we're at the moment. So I'm sure their minds will be fully focused on this one. Mm. But let's get over this hurdle first before we start thinking about too much bigger picture stuff.
Well, Connor Chaplin's post-match press conference at the weekend began with, I asked him, just, you must be pleased with the good afternoon, Connor. It's like, yep, but it's on to Tuesday now. That was the opening line. And I think they'd had it impressed on them that you go away, you rest, you recover, you eat right, and you come back. And Connor, I can imagine Connor Chaplin is probably one of the most kind of ingrained professionals that there is in terms of his football, but they've got a squad full of them. And I think that will be replicated across the board. With Accrington, Stu, we're beyond the phase of, oh no, it's Accrington, aren't we? That's done. Can we move beyond that, particularly at Portman Road? Ipswich have beaten Accrington every time at Portman Road. Of course, they'll take it incredibly seriously. And I think everything you've just said about how the game will go will probably play out that way. But the nervous Accrington energy, that can get in the bin, can't it? Been done.
Coleman's still the manager, of course, has been there for a long time. But gone are the days of Colby Bishop, Harry Pell, Michael Nottingham's still there, but he's injured. I think Matt Butcher got poached by Plymouth last summer. Dion Charles has gone to Bolton. Going further back, Ross Sykes, who was one of their giant centre-halves, has gone. They are not the Accrington side that caused Ipswich a few problems over a few years. So wasn't easy for Ipswich up at the Wham Stadium earlier in the season. Both the goals from Chaplin came late in the game, but there's no doubt about it. This game falls in the kind of must-win bracket of the last few ones for Ipswich if they're going to do what we hope they can do this season.
Yep. We always talk about the Ipswich team. I think the place I'd want to start with that is there an 18 here now? Is there a settled 18? Do you think
it's getting there, isn't it? It's been the same 18 for the last three
games. I'll list the players that doesn't involve first. That doesn't involve Richard Keogh, George Edmondson. This is fit players. Keogh, Edmondson, Lee, Aluko, Vincent Young.
I'll tell you one person that might make a difference to settled 18 would be Tyrese John-Jules. once he gets himself back in the mix. I think he'll be joining in training this week, by all accounts. So it might take him another week or so to really sort of be fully involved in or getting on the verge of match day squads. But I could see him certainly taking one of those bench places at some point, possibly for Kyle Edwards, you would think, sort of stylistically, the most likely. Maybe Caden Jackson, I don't know. But he's one that I think could kind of knock on the door of that 18. But yeah, starting to look a lot more settled, isn't it?
I feel sure there will be a change or two to the 11 for this one. Not necessarily with Bolton in mind as such, but just a three-game week in mind. They kept an unchanged team, obviously, between the Forest Green and MK Dons games. But any areas that you'd be looking to freshen? Luongo is obviously an interesting one, whether he can do 90, like, at some point, whether he came off, what did he come off, like 70 come off at the weekend? It's just whether he can start that again and then still be in the mix to start the Bolton game as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I'd put Nathan Broadhead in that same bracket as well. He's someone that's had hamstring problems over a prolonged period of time. Arriving at Ipswich, they kind of wrapped him up in cotton wool for the first few weeks. I'd be surprised if he'll do a three games in a week from the start. So he might be one that dips out and Marcus Harness might come back in and get a game. Luongo, as you say, for reasons outlined, Cameron Humphreys is there and ready to jump back in. Bit of a question mark over Leif Davis, who limped off towards the end, stayed down for quite a long time and gingerly made his way around the side of the pitch. McKenna said afterwards that they're hopeful it's just a kick and it will be one that settles down. We haven't had an update on that yet as we sit here recording early afternoon on Monday. Even if it is just a kick and some bruising and stuff like that, maybe he dips out for a game and Greg Lee comes in. But all these players we're talking about have got very ready and willing replacements that train hard every day, that are up to speed with the way McKenna wants them to play. You wouldn't be too concerned at all if Lee, Humphreys, Harness, Hurst for Ladapo is another potential change. We've seen the strikers rotate quite a bit. You wouldn't be worried too much at all if all or any of those changes were made, would you?
No, strong old squad they've got, Ipswich Town. Is there anything else you want to talk about heading into the Accrington game before we always do predictions at the end of the pod. But I'm more interested. I feel sure you're going to tell me that you think Ipswich are going to win, but I want to know if I'm going to win my money. That's my.
You need three goals. So the bet was to remind people, this is with our fictional bookmaker, Heath Bookies.
Wow.
He's going to pay you in Bitcoin or real money.
Playmobil money, the coins that come out of Connect 4. Who knows? Who knows?
So remind listeners of what
four wins. Was. Four wins from the games against, Ryan, I've forgotten what they all were. Forest Green, MK Dons, Burton, Accrington. Four straight wins with 12 goals or more scored. And we're on 9 now with 2 4-0 wins and a 1-0 at MK Dons. So I need three goals scored in a victory to financially ruin Mark.
Whoa, it's going to be tight for that, I think. So when we did I did a look ahead to March fixtures and made some longer term predictions, which are always difficult when you're starting to talk about games that are 3-4 weeks down the road. But I had Ipswich down for a harder win against Burton 2-0, which probably reflected more what the game was like on Saturday. And then I did have them to cut loose 4-0 against Accrington in this game. Now it's getting a little bit closer. I don't know whether it's just the natural sort of nerves with it all. I'm starting to think it might not be as comfortable as I thought. But yeah, Andy, I think you will win your money. I do think you'll win your money.
If it was you, right, in this situation, and it's not fictional, it's real. and you owed somebody £34 million, and with the greatest of respect to Mark, no means to pay that.
Yeah.
What would you do?
God, that's quite heavy.
How would you handle that situation?
If I got £34 million in debt?
Yeah, to somebody like me, for example. Someone who's not going to come after you with a shotgun, but would be...
What are you going to do? I'd just turn up. You'd come to my house and say, can I have my money, please? So what are you going to do about it? You go, no, all right. Yeah, fair enough. I'll get it to you next week. Yeah, just make sure you do. I reckon we could string that out for quite some time.
So basically, you'd treat me like a mug. Okay. Any other course of action? Maybe try and cut a deal, potentially?
If Mark's listening to this,
I have listened to this. Mark will listen to this before the game.
Yeah,
he's told us he goes out and he might go out for a run. He might be listening to us on a run. I'm open to settling.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you. So, say this was a real bet with the bookies, right?
Which it is.
Yeah, okay. What cash out option are they giving you now, and would you take it?
Well, you've done a significant amount of the job is done. So you've earned a good portion, but it doesn't. Cash outs don't work kind of on that basis. So it wouldn't be for. I don't think it would be for three quarters of the money. I would take. If he wants to cash out now, I'd take 18 million.
You'd take 18.
Yeah.
Okay. You're not going
to
hold your nerve.
24 hours to reply. I mean, it would be more fun if I held my nerve, wouldn't it? But it's up to him. No, I'd take the offer. He'd have to pay though. He'd have to pay that cash out. It wouldn't just be like, I'll cash out. I'll get you the money at some point. It'd be like, here is £24 million.
Shall I call him? He's on holiday. Shall I call him and find out?
Yeah, give him a call.
See if he'd take the money. So what do you want?
What did I say? Let's say around 20 million.
Let's ring him.
Excellent. He's going to be concerned that something's gone horribly wrong with the production of our newspaper / websites, isn't he?
Shame. That is a shame.
Oh, as well.
Turn that off before his number gets read out. I'll text him. We'll find out. But yeah, we'll lock that in. So you're bottling it and you're taking the cash out, essentially. Yeah.
Well, mainly just to do a good favour for a friend, really.
Okay.
I'm not going to send the lads around. I'm interested to see if he listens to this before the game, actually. But he's got, what has he got, like 28 hours to respond? The offer's there, mate, but
I'm sure gamblers would probably be telling us that there's some way of kind of offsetting that bet if you cashed in and then laid it off with some other bet. But that's not my world. I don't understand it enough.
Me neither. I think the stakes have got a little bit too high with this, if I'm being completely honest.
So what's your score prediction then?
If you don't 3-0 on the nose.
Okay, so you believe? Yeah, I think so. You do really think that they're going to do it?
Yeah, I'm doing it for him.
Okay,
doing it for him because I worry about him. I'd take the money and his dog. That's what I'd do. I'd take his dog until he gave me the cash. then we'll see. And his air fryer. I'll have the dog and the air fryer, and we'll see. But we've talked about this for far too long. Any other business, Stuart Watson?
No other business. I suppose I better stick with my 4-0 prediction. I don't know from earlier in the in the month. I don't know if I truly believe in 4-0. I think I might just dial that down to more of a 2-0. I think there might be some frustrations in this game, but Ipswich will get the job done. And I think George Hurst might be getting his first league goal for Ipswich Town in this game.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? As much as I think we can appreciate what he's offered to the team, we certainly can in certain situations. It would be nice if he was scoring. Like Freddie, I think George has started 6 of the 11 games that he's been here for. Freddie started 5, but the goals have come for Freddie in that time, even off the bench. They've come for him. But it'd be to have them both kind of in the groove of scoring goals a little bit would be great, wouldn't it? And a real weapon for Town, particularly then, as you've mentioned, to then add someone like John Jules into the mix as well, either as the central striker or probably more likely as an option as one of the 10. I really liked him in those 10 positions early in the season. That's where I liked him. They've got weapons, haven't they?
They have indeed. Now go and show it against Accrington, please, Ipswich. Then we can talk about Bolton later in the week.
Oh, and we will. Thank you to our sponsors, Ginger Pickle and Manscaped. Thank you to you, Stu. Thank you for joining me. And we'll be back later in the week, hopefully, to talk about the 12 points being secure and then looking ahead to the trip to Bolton, which should be a cracker. We'll see you then. Hello and welcome to Monday's edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. My name is Andy Warren and I'm here in association with Ginger Pickle and Manscaped. And for my own amusement, I've decided to start recording the podcast before Stuart arrives. And here he is. I started the podcast and he has arrived. Just been talking for 2 minutes without you, mate.
No, you haven't.
I have.
Was it good?
Yeah, I was having a great time. But you're here now. Yeah. I've not got 45 minutes in me. But let's go.
Okay.
You all right?
It has caught me on the hop, but let's do it. You're lying, aren't you?
No, look at the timer.
What are we talking about?
I've done the intro, done all of that, and we're going to talk about the Burton game, probably the Accrington game as well.
Okay, I'm in.
All right, let's rock.
it's absolutely thrown me, mate, this has, yeah, I'll be honest. Yeah.
Let's start again.
I think we should. I liked the theory of this, but my little brain couldn't get into Show mode.
It's not worked out how I hope.
I'm sorry, mate.
It's not your fault.
Was it a really good intro as well?
No. We've got two options from this point. We can just roll. We can just start again here.
I think, yeah. And for the sake of 2 minutes of audio, let's just start again.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.